You're using AI right now, and you probably don't even realize how much. Your Netflix recommendations, your GPS rerouting you around traffic, your social media feed deciding what you see and what you don't, the spam filter on your email, the autocorrect on your phone. AI is already embedded in your life in ways that are so seamless you've stopped noticing them. And every single one of those interactions has a physical cost. Water, electricity, land, air quality, and somebody's neighborhood is paying for it. But here's the thing. This isn't just about AI. This is about a pattern that shows up in almost everything we consume. And today we're going to talk about the true cost of convenience, what it takes for things to show up in your life looking easy, and why understanding that cost actually makes you a better business owner. I found out recently that a modular Bitcoin mining facility was being proposed near my town. My town, 10 acres, Tennessee, and my immediate reaction was visceral. Absolutely not. Not here. And then I caught myself because that reaction, that not in my neighborhood feeling, is the exact same reaction that people have had for decades about the things that power our convenience. The mines in the Congo that produce the cobalt for your phone battery. The factories overseas that build your laptop. The power plants that keep your cloud storage running. We've been comfortable with all of it because it was far away, somebody else's backyard, somebody else's water, somebody else's air. But here's the thing I had to sit with. If I wouldn't accept it for my neighborhood, I shouldn't accept it for anyone's neighborhood. That's what a global perspective actually means. Not just thinking about the world when it's convenient, thinking about it when it costs you something. And I want to be honest with you, I wasn't unaware of this conversation before the data center proposal showed up on a city planning agenda. I almost got a minor in sustainability. I wrote a thesis over a decade ago about why every building in Center City, Philadelphia, and Manhattan should have a green roof. I have undergrad degrees in African American studies and sociology from Temple University. I've been thinking about extraction and supply chains and who pays the real cost of convenience for most of my adult life. I'm vegan, and one of the reasons for that is environmental. A plant-based diet produces 75% less greenhouse gas emissions and uses 75% less land than a meat-heavy diet. I actually learned that while writing my MBA thesis. That's an Oxford study of over 55,000 people. Being vegan is one of the single most impactful things an individual can do for the planet, and it's one I chose years ago. I haven't eaten meat in over 2 decades. But like everything we become reliant on and accepting of in our first world lives, the data center conversation was largely background noise, until it wasn't. Privilege tends to work like that. You can hear the noise if you listen, but convenience gives you the option not to. And as a Black woman who's deeply aware of history and extraction and enslavement, I can't just go on with business as usual once that noise moves to the foreground. I live by radical accountability. That means once you understand the extraction behind something, you change your behavior. Not as a performance, as a practice. It's why I don't purchase added sugar products. Not just as a diet choice, but as a supply chain choice too. Once you understand the history of sugar production, from the 12.5 million enslaved Africans who were transported to the Americas overwhelmingly for sugar production, to the debt bondage still happening on sugarcane fields in India today, you can't unsee it. It's why I won't visit the UAE once I learned how those skyscrapers were built. It's why I think about where my chocolate comes from, who picked the bananas in my smoothie, and what the organic avocado on my plate actually costs beyond the dollar amount. Today, I'm going to talk about the pattern of extraction that runs through almost everything we consume, what AI data centers are adding to that pattern, how the major companies are handling it, and why all of this connects back to you, your business, and the options you're building toward. Because this is a systems thinking platform. And systems thinking means seeing the whole board, not just the square you're standing on. Settle in. I'm Makeda Boehm. I've closed nearly $10 million in tech sales over 4 years, earned seven figures doing it, and here I teach service-based business owners how to use AI, automations, systems, and agents to create more money, time, and options. AI is moving at the speed of daily, and I help you keep up. We like to think we're informed consumers. We recycle. We buy organic when we can. Maybe we carry a reusable bag. But most of us have a blind spot about the full supply chain of what we consume. And that blind spot isn't about information. The information is not hidden. It's not even hard to find. Over 2.1 million children work on cocoa farms in West Africa, and cocoa farmers now receive 6% of the value of a chocolate bar, down from 50% in the 1970s. Garment workers in Bangladesh earn about $96 a month, while the fast fashion industry generates $148 billion a year, and less than 2% of those workers earn a living wage. Drug cartels have infiltrated Mexico's avocado industry, which generates over $2.5 billion in annual exports, and tens of thousands of acres of forest have been illegally cleared to grow the fruit that shows up at your grocery store. Banana plantation workers in Ecuador earn a few dollars a day while being sprayed with toxic fungicides from airplanes overhead. You can look up every one of these things. The information exists. So the question isn't about awareness. It's about what we do with what we already know. And the issue is cognitive dissonance. We hold two truths at the same time, and we find a way to make them coexist. We know that children are harvesting our cocoa. We also really like chocolate. We know that garment workers can't feed their families. We also want a $10 shirt. We know that avocado production is fueling cartel violence and deforestation. We also want guacamole with our tacos. And here's the pattern I've noticed. We tend to pick one cause. We find the one issue that resonates with us, and we put our energy there. Maybe it's sustainability, animal welfare, workers' rights, or the climate. And we put blinders on to everything else because it's inconvenient to realize how everything we do has a cost to it. I get it. It's overwhelming. You can't hold every supply chain in your head while you're also trying to run a business and raise kids and build something meaningful. But systems thinking means at least seeing the pattern, even when you can't fix every instance of it. And the pattern is this: when something is cheap and convenient, someone somewhere is usually paying the difference. There is a true cost to everything. Now, here's what's interesting about AI. When you look at the industries I just described, cocoa, sugar, bananas, avocados, garment manufacturing, the exploitation is directly human. Children with machetes, workers in debt bondage, garment workers earning less than a third of a living wage, communities terrorized by cartels. These are trillion-dollar industries collectively, built on the backs of the most vulnerable people on the planet. AI and data center infrastructure is a multi-trillion-dollar industry, trillion with a T. But the exploitation looks different. There are no children in the data centers. There's no forced labor running the servers. The cost is environmental and infrastructural. Water, electricity, air quality, and the impact on the communities where these facilities are built. That's a meaningful distinction. It doesn't make the cost acceptable, but it means the conversation is different, and honestly, it means the path to fixing it is more straightforward. Environmental costs can be engineered. Human trafficking and child labor require dismantling entire systems of poverty and corruption. So let's look at what's actually happening with AI infrastructure. Data centers are not new. They've been powering the internet, cloud computing, streaming services, and social media for decades. The server farms that run your email, your cloud storage, your banking app, your video calls, all of that has been consuming electricity and water for years. What's changed is the scale. AI models require dramatically more compute power than a standard web search or a Netflix stream. Every ChatGPT query uses roughly 10 times more electricity than a standard Google search. And there are over a billion messages sent to ChatGPT every single day. Global data center electricity consumption is expected to approach 1,050 terawatt hours by 2026 end. That would make data centers the fifth largest electricity consumer in the world, between Japan and Russia. Not a company, not an industry, a country-level amount of electricity. And that number includes all data centers, not just AI, the internet you've been using for decades. It already had a massive infrastructure footprint. AI is accelerating it. Let's look at how the major companies are handling this. Starting with xAI. This is Elon Musk's AI company that built its Colossus data center in Memphis, Tennessee. They built it in under 122 days. Members of the Memphis City Council found out about it on the news. No public meetings, no environmental reviews, no community input. The facility is running methane-powered gas turbines, many without permits, and a legal petition found that it's likely the largest industrial source of nitrogen oxides in the city. Nitrogen oxides contribute to smog, worsen asthma, and increase cancer risk. South Memphis, where this facility operates, is a predominantly Black community that has dealt with industrial pollution for decades. The facility pulls millions of gallons daily from the Memphis Sand Aquifer, the region's drinking water supply. Just days ago, activists blocked the entrance to the facility, wearing respirators to filter the air pollutants from the gas turbines. Meta is interesting because Llama, their AI model, is open source, which means you can download it and run it on your own hardware. That's a meaningful contribution to decentralization. But Meta's own data center footprint tells a bigger story. And it's important to remember that those data centers aren't just powering AI. They're powering Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook, and every platform billions of people use every day. Their total data center energy consumption reached nearly 15,000 gigawatt hours in the latest reporting period. A single Meta data center in Louisiana can use more than 23 million gallons of water per day. To put that in perspective, that's roughly 35 Olympic swimming pools of water every single day for one facility. That's enough water to supply about 76,000 homes. OpenAI's projections show they plan to increase electricity consumption 125 times by the end of the decade. In the Texas regions where their data centers are going, there will be more data centers than public hospitals. Their electricity consumption will exceed all residential homes combined. I gave birth to both of my children in Texas, lived there for years, got married there, and we had to leave, not only because it was unbearably hot, but the air quality was horrible from all of the oil refineries, the water was toxic, and the flooding was unbelievable. And yet, the massive industrialization continues to keep powering the nation's convenience. Anthropic, the company that makes Claude, which is the AI model I primarily use and teach with, has invested $50 billion in US data centers. They've made specific commitments, paying 100% of grid upgrade costs, bringing new power generation online, deploying water-efficient cooling. That's meaningfully better than running unpermitted gas turbines in a black neighborhood. But it's still $50 billion of data centers. The cost is being managed more responsibly, not eliminated. I use these tools every day. I build with them. I teach with them. This podcast exists because of them. And I'm telling you the full picture because being a responsible user of technology means seeing the full supply chain. The same way being a responsible consumer of anything means understanding what it took to get to you. So, what does responsible use look like for someone like you, an accountant in Osaka, or a coach in Savannah, or a speaker in Casablanca, or a therapist in Cartagena, or a fractional executive in Sacramento who's using AI to build a better business? First, understand that not all AI use is equal. A simple text query uses significantly less energy than generating an image or training a custom model. When you can accomplish something with a well-crafted prompt instead of running an agent for 30 minutes, you're making a resource-conscious choice without sacrificing the output. If you're a speaker using AI to repurpose your keynote into 10 pieces of content, a single well-structured prompt that produces all 10 is better than 10 separate sessions. If you're a consultant using AI to build client proposals, a template system that reuses your foundation documents is more efficient than starting from scratch every time. These aren't just environmental choices. They're better business practices. Less compute, less cost, better output. Second, pay attention to which companies you're giving your money and your data to. The differences between how these companies handle infrastructure, community impact, and environmental responsibility are real, and those differences matter. As a business owner, your vendor choices are your values in action. Third, and this is where it gets exciting for me, explore open source and local options. Llama, Mistral, and other open source models can run on hardware you own. Right now, the quality gap between open source models and the frontier models like Claude is real for complex tasks, but for structured work like form filling, data processing, opportunity matching, and certain types of automation, open source models running locally are ready today. What does that actually look like? I've been doing some research, but I haven't done this myself yet, so take this with a grain of salt. A machine with a high-end graphics card in your home office, you download the model, you run it, your data never leaves your property, your queries don't travel to a data center, your usage doesn't draw from someone else's aquifer. The software tools to do this, things like OLlama and Llama.cpp, are apparently free and straightforward. More on this as I start testing and using these systems. I live on 10 acres in Tennessee. Theoretically, I could power a local AI setup with my solar panels or a residential grade roof wind turbine. My queries would run on my hardware, powered by my electricity, cooled by ambient air. That's not science fiction. That's available technology right now. The solar, wind, hardware, and the models. All of it exists. The lift is just fitting the pieces together. And this connects to a philosophy I've been living for a long time, even before I had a name for it. It's called solarpunk. And at its core, solarpunk is the belief that technology and nature can work together. That a sustainable future is buildable and not just imaginable. That social justice, financial justice, and ecological justice are the same project. Now, I'm not fully solarpunk. If we're being honest, I don't believe that decentralized systems are always better than centralized ones. Like almost every situation, it depends. Context matters. But the principles resonate deeply with how I think and how I build. The podcast is literally called Seed in Society. Seeds grow things. Society is the system. Technology working with nature in service of people. That's been the philosophy from the beginning. And I want to draw a distinction here because it matters. The goal isn't just sustainable. Sustainable means maintaining the current state. The goal is regenerative, actively improving the state. A food forest that produces more nutrition every year without replanting. A content engine that compounds without requiring more of your time. An AI system that creates capacity in your business while reducing your dependence on infrastructure you don't control. Regenerative means the system gives back more than it takes. That's the standard. Let me bring this back to why it matters for you. Because if you're a consultant, a coach, a speaker, a therapist, a dentist, an architect, a fractional executive, a creator, anyone running a service-based business, this isn't abstract. You're using these tools right now to serve your clients, produce your content, run your operations. The supply chain of your AI tools are part of your business supply chain, whether you've thought about it that way or not. I talk about more money, more time, and more options. That's the promise. And everything I teach is in service of those three things. But today I want to go deeper on what more options actually means. Because options are not an abstraction. Options are, I can live where I want because my business isn't tied to a zip code. Options are, I can take the afternoon off because my systems are running without me. Options are, I can say no to a client who doesn't align with my values because I have enough revenue flowing that I don't need to say yes out of desperation. But all of those options require something underneath them. You need air to breathe. You need clean water to drink. You need healthy soil and safe food. You need a body that's healthy enough to use the time you've created. More time means nothing if you're sick from the pollution in your neighborhood. More options means nothing if the places worth living are being consumed by the infrastructure that powers the tools creating those options. More money means nothing if you can't buy clean water because the aquifer is depleted. Money is a conduit to resources. The end goal is always resources, experiences, living life, and the ultimate resources are the ones that keep you alive. Air, water, soil, food, shelter. That's why I talk about asset-based wealth. That's why I live on 10 mortgage-free acres with a food forest and blackberry bushes that come back every year without me replanting them. That's infrastructure. That's perennial wealth. The homestead isn't separate from the AI business. It's the same philosophy. Build assets that compound without requiring your constant presence. And what I'm telling you today is that AI should help you have more capacity so you can do more human things. Go hike, garden, read a book, dance, listen to music, experience energy and people and joy. That is what all of this is supposed to be in service of. And here's where I want to bring this full circle for you as a business owner, because this episode might feel heavy and you might be thinking, okay, but what do I do with this in my coaching practice? How does this help me close clients? Why does knowing about supply chains matter when I'm trying to scale my consulting business? It matters because systems thinking is a competitive advantage. When you understand supply chains, you understand business. When you can see the full cost of something, not just the sticker price, but the human cost, the environmental cost, the infrastructure cost, you make better decisions about your vendors, about your pricing, about your positioning, about the tools you build your business on. I've used systems thinking to close millions of dollars in sales because I understand relationships, motivations, context, and what's needed in an enterprise partnership. The consultant who understands the full value chain of their AI tools is a more sophisticated operator than the one who just sees a subscription price. The speaker who can articulate why asset-based thinking applies to technology, infrastructure, and food systems, and business models has a richer worldview to draw from on stage. The creator who builds systems that are regenerative, that give back more value than they take, creates something that compounds instead of depleting. This is what I mean when I say more options. Options don't just come from revenue, they come from awareness, from discernment, from making choices with full information instead of operating on convenience and assumption. If the infrastructure required to power these tools is destroying the physical foundations of a life worth living, then we need to hold that tension, interrogate it, and utilize those same tools to create a solution. Not stop using the tools. Use them responsibly. Understand the cost, push for better, and where you can, build toward owning your own infrastructure so that the power and the benefit stay with you instead of extracting from your community. I want to close with something that's been on my mind. We've been through versions of this before. The personal computer changed everything. The smartphone changed everything. The internet changed everything. But the cost of those revolutions happened in someone else's neighborhood. The mines, the factories, the supply chains that made your iPhone possible were far enough away that you could enjoy the product without confronting the process. AI is different because the infrastructure isn't only overseas anymore. It's in Memphis, it's in Texas, it's in Louisiana, it's in Northern Virginia, it's being proposed in small towns across this country. The cost of this revolution is showing up in our own backyards. And the question is, are we going to respond the way we always have? Are we going to keep singing the song about paving paradise and then parking in the parking lot? Are we going to point fingers at deforestation in the Amazon and then let our own aquifers get drained for someone else's profit? Or are we going to do something different this time? Because AI is the great equalizer. I believe that deeply. These tools give people access to strategic capability that used to be gatekept behind wealth, credentials, and geography. A dentist in Kumamoto can build the same systems as a consultant in Seattle. A speaker in Roatan can run the same content engine as a speaker in Tampa. A therapist in Tulsa, and a coach in Bangalore, and a fractional executive in Fort Wayne can all access the same level of leverage. That's real. That's worth protecting. But protecting it means making sure the infrastructure that powers it doesn't destroy the communities it's supposed to serve. And it means being honest about what we're building, who's paying for it, and what we're taking away in the process, What are we actually developing? And I say developing with quotation marks because in a lot of ways that can be synonymous with destruction. I have hundreds of oak trees on my property, clean running water, and thriving fertile soil. The only development they need is seeds, sunlight, and water, not a data or Bitcoin mining center. I don't have all the answers. I'm on this trail with you, turning around and showing you what I just figured out. And what I just figured out is that responsible AI use is not just about how you prompt. It's about understanding the full supply chain of the tools you depend on and building toward a future where the technology works with the world instead of consuming it. That's more money because efficient systems cost less to run. That's more time because owning your infrastructure means less dependence on platforms that change their terms. And that's more options. Because when the tools you build with aren't threatening the world you want to live in, the best possibilities for the future remain. Find everything you need to make more money, time, and options in your service-based business at seedinsociety.com. Sign up for the newsletter, find every AI tool I use and recommend, labs and workshops I run, check out the blog for even more breakdowns, or do the free AI employee report, all in one place. And if you enjoyed this show and got value from it, I'd appreciate it if you could rate and leave a review. That helps this free education reach more people. And share it with someone you know needs it. Until next time, continue planting the seeds for a better society.